I mean, I'm familiar with your work. I know you've been in the industry for some 30 plus years. Can you talk to us a little bit about your experience? You know, tell us how long you've been in the industry, what your experience was like early on when it came to being, you know, of indigenous descent and being cast as a Native Hawaiian or a Native American.
Yeah, let me start by saying, I got 47 years according to my SAG pension, Screen Actors Guild pension. So I've been at this for a while, and I was very blessed to be at the right place at the right time. So my father is born in Tahiti. My mother was born in the state of Hawaii.
Okay.
And I was born in Hollywood, California, to Polynesian mixed race parents, French, English, Spanish, Aleut, Native American, maybe a little Italian and German inside there. But when I graduated high school, I wanted to become a baseball player. And that lasted 7 months after I graduated high school, getting drafted out of high school. And I was a pretty good size guy for my size. And I was working at a nightclub underage because I needed money. My father was sick. He had cancer. And my dad was wondering what my future was going to be since my first pick kind of went away. So I started working extra, and you got to remember, as a kid, I worked in films with my father.
Right.
So like Mutiny on the Bounty, Devil at 4 O'Clock, Adventures in Paradise, The Ugly American, goes on. And so I started working extra, and what I learned when I was working extra is that I was watching these stunt guys do their thing, and I was just tremendously driven to that. And then there was a thing called affirmative action. Now, to some people, it didn't benefit. To me, it benefited me. Affirmative action benefited me.
Yeah.
And the stunt community came from the circus and from the rodeo. So people of color really weren't in the circus and really weren't in the rodeos, you know, until about the 80s. And I'm talking 74, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is what I'm talking in 1974. So I was able to get in. But you know what? I owe that success to the African-American stunt community because they really paved the way for women, Asians, what we were considered the brown guys, you know, Latin, Polynesian, whatever, Native American. And, you know, if it wasn't for them, a lot of guys like me wouldn't have gotten my shot. So I got my shot. And there was a thing called the minority quota, which was 18% minority. So out of 100 stunt days, you have to have 18 days toward people of color or females or handicapped individuals. Mm-hmm. And I could say a few lines, and then they could light me on fire and throw me down the steps. And that's how my acting career was born. You know, I was pretty light on my feet, and I was a good fighter. So, you know, all the good guys were, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes. The bad guys were, you know, the guys of color. And that's how I got started. So what benefited me is that I kept going. And people say, well, Branscom, are you still a stunt guy today after 47 years? You know, my heart's right there with the guys. I've got my equipment. My sons and my daughter have worked in the industry in that department. But, you know, our industry has changed.
Yeah.
So if you're asking me how was it, As a person of color, the industry had to learn this word, which was inclusion.
Yeah.
And in the 70s, inclusion was kind of uncomfortable. It wasn't hip. They didn't like it. And I was the guy that kind of bridged the quota. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
And attitude is everything, man. I'm telling you, if you got a good attitude, they want you there. It's not necessarily how much talent you have. It's always about, you know, your attitude. And you got to spend 16, 18 hours on set with somebody. And sometimes hanging out with the most talented guy is not fun or great or sharing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's the guys who really want to be there, and I really wanted to be there. Because, you know, my motivation was I had to make money because my father was sick with cancer. And, you know, nobody was paying the bills, and I had to pay the bills. And here we are in Encino, California. I grew up in a Jewish neighborhood. I was the only person of color until the Jacksons moved in. So it was kind of great. And what was great for me is that I never lost my indigenous roots because my father wrote a monthly newspaper, Les Amis de Tahiti. And, you know, my parents divorced when I was young, but, you know, there's always that thing where Ohana comes from all places.
Yeah.
And you respect your kupuna. Yeah. So that was always kind of inbred in me, and I'm blessed to have the enlightenment of many cultures. So I hope that answered your question.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. How did you become connected to Hawaii? Were you first cast in some roles as a Hawaiian or in shows that were produced here, or was it the other way around? Did you come to Hawaii? Did you have a connection and eventually Hollywood saw that?
Yeah, so let me tell you this. So my dad used to do, you know, Wake of the Red Witch. He would do, he was a regular on Adventures in Paradise. So when they needed kids, you know, I was there. When we did Mutiny on the Bounty, I had my sixth birthday in Papeete, and Marlon Brando threw me a nice little party with Richard Harris and Trevor Howard.
Wow.
So my first entree was to be that little Polynesian kid, and that's really what happened. So, you know, in those days, when my father came to America, you got to remember my father immigrated to America, and my mother, you know, immigrated from Hawaii when it was still a territory, for God's sake, looking for a better opportunities in the U.S. mainland. They were making those Polynesian movies with Dorothy L'Amour and Bing Crosby and Bob Hope, and you know, there was many of them. You know, that there was a foray of Polynesian actors and Native American actors in Hollywood way back in the 50s. There was Leo C. Richmond, my father, with Max Reed. There was Augie Nevis. There was Amy Hanaili'i Gilliam's grandmother. She was part of that troupe. And you got to remember, at the Lexington Hotel in New York City, they had a Polynesian show there. Mm-hmm. And the Polynesian Society in Los Angeles at that time had 6,000, 7,000 members. So the Polynesian-themed idea, relationship, was quite strong at that time. And like I said, I was at the right place at the right time and got my entree into it. What also, as a little kid, there was a little TV show called National Velvet. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was about a horse, correct?
It was about a horse.
Yeah.
And in the movie, it was Elizabeth Taylor. But in the series, in the TV series, there was another girl. And you know, when as a young person on set, you have to do 4 hours on set, and you did 4 hours in the school. So in the set school, on set, you're there, and you're looking around the room, and you're going, wow, look at all these people, you know, trying to be positioned into the motion picture industry. And there I was, this long-haired brown kid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was quite eye-opening, and I studied it a lot with my eyes and kind of kept notes in my brain, if you know what I mean.
Are there any roles that stand out to you, or do you have a favorite where you play a local guy or on a film set that was shooting here or set here?
Well, yeah. So number one, I did an ABC pilot called Waikiki, and you know, you had Dak Rambo, Steve Marichuk, you had Donna Mills, you had myself, and I was a young brown actor, and I remember a crew member came up to me and said, "Hey, bro, where are you from?" Right. And I said, "Los Angeles." And he goes, "Wow, bro, you look and talk just like us." I go, "Where are you from?" He goes, "Waianae." And he was a grip. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I did Death Moon on Kauai as a Hawaiian actor hired out of L.A. And I got the same thing. I'll never forget. And that was a guy named Joe Ahuna, number four. And Al Santos. And those guys were just so loving, you know. And they said, "Wow, bro, you know, you got a pretty big part, but we, we never seen you. So as time went on, you know, I would guest star in Hawaii a lot. I did a 2-hour Vegas with, Lauren Green and Pernell Roberts, and we were all the bad guys, and did a series called Hawaiian Heat. You know, and naturally, I did the very first Magnum, and those scenes were filmed in Los Angeles. I was on the very first Magnum, and then I worked the very last Hawaii 5-0 ever, which we shot in Honolulu. So when you say to me what part really stands out, man, I'll tell you, I'm really blessed to have those jobs. When you're coming from L.A. and you get the opportunities to play those of your ancestors, you got to remember, a guy my size would play the bad guy. Race had nothing to do with it. I just looked different than the leading man, and then I was taller. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
When I fought Steven Seagal in Hard to Kill, you know, I was a guy named Sanchez, and it goes on and on and on. You know, when Steven Seagal is going to fight somebody, he can't fight some guy smaller than him because he's going to look like a bully. So you want to have some guy your size or above. And you know, I did 6 Chuck Norris movies, and Chuck had me on Walker, and Chuck and I are friends. So I knew what I had to do. Never be taller than Chuck. And when you're fighting Chuck, he's going to win. So make him look good. And the secret to my part of the industry is that I made him look good. I didn't have an ego about it because I was there for a paycheck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I wasn't really there for the art because I didn't really know art. I just loved doing and pretending these parts that I was playing. You know, when you're a young kid, you do a lot of pretending, man.
Yeah. You know, when you look over the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years, you can kind of see how Hollywood has become, or the film industry has become more inclusive as
yep.
time has gone on. In fact, I watched a movie last night, Minari, about this Korean American family living in Arkansas, which I thought was really well done. And as you look back on the recent years, what's your impression on inclusion? Is the film industry being more willing to tell stories about families and people that haven't been told in the past?
Well, first of all, let me say this. So the industry is different. Before, you only had domestic television and you had the movie screen theaters. Now you've got 500 channels on domestic television. The movie screen theater kind of thing due to COVID is kind of iffy. But you've got streaming 24/7. I mean, it's on and on from Hulu to Netflix to Amazon to Apple TV. So there's a lot more outlets. Now, what are people watching? The menu for each person's culture is starting to define itself. So if you are a black person and you want to see black programming, there's places for you to go. If you're an Asian Korean programming guy, there's a place for you to watch your people. There's a place for you to go. When you go to the bigger television shows, the inclusion is being melted in there now more than ever. It's I don't want to say it's our time. I don't want to say that. What I want to say is it's time that everyone gets to see a slice of life for everybody. You know, like you said, a Korean family in Arkansas. Where else are you going to see that? Right?
Right. Right.
It's inclusion. It's also the belief that this world is made up of so many people that how lucky we are to know a little bit about them. So, you know, I've been an actor and a stunt guy for so long. And for the last 20 years, I've also been a producer behind the camera. And I know what stations are buying what. I know what advertisers are going to spend their money on. And it's a very calculated mathematical system. A lot of things don't happen by chance. They happen for a reason. So here we are, you know, Netflix on January 29th has this Hawaiian movie, Finding Ohana. Now, you know, to my knowledge, and help me if you can, I don't know any other movie that's been family-oriented about a Hawaiian family. Or, let me put this this way, a family that is broken up, half of them living on the mainland, and me, my part, as grandpa, as papa, living in Hawaii, and they come back. And now they're going through the diffusion of becoming Hawaiian or learning the ways that they've lost. And in the meantime, there's a little treasure in the Ko'olau Range that my granddaughter's going to mess with. I don't want to give the whole movie away, but here we are, right? Netflix threw the dice on the table, is playing their best cards, and you know what? This movie's getting huge, huge response. Because not only do people of color or Polynesian families want to see or know or reintroduce themselves to this, but it's also people of all colors. You know, I want to say this, white is a color. So people that may not be of the, you know, tan persuasion, they too want to know about their brothers and sisters across the room. And that's what makes me proud about Finding Ohana. Because, yeah, it's not easy to sell a picture, get it made, and then make a great movie. This is a great movie. This was, I mean, wait till you see it. With a wonderful director named Jude Wang, she is wonderful. And she's sensitive. And with a young cast of Polynesian people, got a girl, Lindsay Watkins. I mean, she graduated from Kamehameha, you know. And our two leads, my grandson and my granddaughter, I mean, they are just absolutely really good in this movie. Alex Ayona and Kale Piahu, very good people. And what's the other interesting thing is, where do you go to continue your acting career? Do you stay in Hawaii? Most likely you got to go to the mainland. So they, too, are going to learn both sides of this industry and build their mana'o, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And their kuleana.
It sounds like you're pretty hopeful for opportunities for Hawaiian stories to be told and for Hawaiian actors to get a chance to make a career out of this.
You know, I got to play The Rock's brother on Scorpion King. And there I am. It's me, Kelly Hu, and The Rock, and a couple other Polynesian guys, and we were Acadians. And Acadians was like a biblical tribe, but we were all dark-complected. And it was kind of, you know, when you look around the room and you go, this guy's a wrestler. But when you think about it, look what he's done.
Yeah.
As a Polynesian, and he's also African-American. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's a mixed race, and he's been able to do something. I am very hopeful because the next wave of generation are these kids in this movie. And my grandkids, my actual grandkids, who may decide to do whatever they want to do, they've got stories to tell as well. There are so many talented people from Polynesia that are going to start to see doors open where maybe they didn't, where the marketplace was only local. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Was just local. But now it's going to kind of get big. You know, when you got Netflix throwing the do-re-mi's, the money in toward a project, it tells a lot. It tells a lot.
Right on. Thank you so much, Branscombe, for talking with me and for sharing those stories with me. Really appreciate it. And before...
You know,
If you have anything you want to add, go for it.
You know what I want to add? I want to say something to everybody out there, especially the youth that may, you know, if you can change one guy's thought, mentality, their heart, a young female or male, and they have a dream and they don't know how to get to it, and they don't know how to. Take that one step at a time. Let me share something with you. Timing, chance, good fortune, persistence, talent. When the time comes, you got to take a chance on yourself, man. Nobody's going to take a chance on them for you. You got to take a chance yourself. So when the time comes, take a chance on yourself. Good fortune is the next thing. Good fortune comes in many spirits. It comes from the spirit up above. It comes from those around you. And it comes from the earth. So whatever keeps you positive movement in the right direction, that's your good fortune. Timing, chance, good fortune, persistence is number four. Those persistence is you got to keep all three of those things in order. You know what I mean? You've got to be persistent. You got to go after it. When you get knocked down, get up and go after it again. Number five is talent. Talent is the glue that keeps the first four together. But I will say this. If you're waiting for a telephone call because you think you're the best talented guy around, it ain't coming. You got to go. You got to hustle it. And that's what I want to say to all these young people and all the old people, too, who want to take a shot at it. You know, work at it. These things don't happen by accident. You know, it's how you go after it. And stay diligent and remember timing, chance, good fortune, persistence, talent, and share your aloha. Be kind and be loving.